Chapter 27. A few weeks later, coming early one morning into Singapore, from a journey to the southward, I saw the brig lying at anchor in all her usual symmetry and splendor of aspect, as though she had been taken out of a glass case and put delicately into the water that very moment. She was well out in the roadstead, but I steamed in, and took up my habitual berth close in front of the town. Before we had finished breakfast, a quartermaster came to tell me that Captain Allen's boat was coming our way. His smart gig dashed alongside, and in two bounds he was up our accommodation ladder and shaking me by the hand with his nervous grip, his eyes snapping inquisitively, for he supposed I had called at the Seven Isles group on my way. I reached into my pocket for a nicely folded little note, which he grabbed out of my hand without ceremony, and carried off on the bridge to read by himself. After a decent interval I followed him up there, and found him pacing to and fro, for the nature of his emotions made him restless even in his most thoughtful moments. He shook his head at me triumphantly. "Well, my dear boy," he said, "I shall be counting the days now." I understood what he meant. I knew that those young people had settled already on a runaway match without official preliminaries. This was really a logical decision. Old Nelson or Nielsen would never have agreed to give up Freya peaceably to this compromising Jasper. Heavens! What would the Dutch authorities say to such a match? It sounds too ridiculous for words. But there's nothing in the world more selfishly hard than a timorous man in a fright about his ill estate, as old Nelson used to call it in apologetic accents. A heart permeated by a particular sort of fungus proof against sense, feeling, and ridicule. It's a flint. Jasper would have made his request all the same, and then taken his own way. But it was Freya who decided that nothing should be said, on the ground that Papa would only worry himself to distraction. He was capable of making himself ill, and then she wouldn't have the heart to leave him. Here you have the sanity of feminine outlook, and the frankness of feminine reasoning. And for the rest, Miss Freya could read poor dear Papa in the way a woman reads a man like an open book. His daughter once gone, old Nelson would not worry himself. He would raise a great outcry, and make no end of lamentable fuss, but that's not the same thing. The real agonies of indecision, the anguish of conflicting feelings would be spared to him. And as he was too unassuming to rage, he would, after a period of lamentation, devote himself to his ill estate, and to keeping on good terms with the authorities. Time would do the rest. And Freya thought she could afford to wait, while ruling over her own home in the beautiful brig, and over the man who loved her. This was the life for her who had learned to walk on a ship's deck. She was a ship child, a sea girl, if ever there was one. And of course she loved Jasper and trusted him, but there was a shade of anxiety in her pride. It is very fine and romantic to possess for your very own a finely tempered and trusty sword blade. But whether it is the best weapon to counter with the common cudgel play of fate, that's another question. She knew that as he had the more substance of the two, you needn't try any cheap jokes. I am not talking of their weights. She was just a little anxious while he was away, and as he had me who, being a tried confidant, took the liberty to whisper frequently, "the sooner the better." But there was a peculiar vein of obstinacy in Miss Freya, and her reason for delay was characteristic. "Out before my 21st birthday, so that there shall be no mistake in people's minds, as to me being old enough to know what I am doing." Jasper's feelings were in such subjection that he had never even remonstrated against the decree. She was just splendid, whatever she did or said, and there was an end of it for him. I believe that he was subtle enough to be even flattered at bottom at times. And then to console him, he had the brig which seemed pervaded by the spirit of Freya, since whatever he did on board was always done under the supreme sanction of his love. "Yes. I'll soon begin to count the days," he repeated. "Leaving months more. I'll have to crowd 3 trips into that. Mind you don't come to grief trying to do too much," I admonished him. but he dismissed my caution with a laugh and an elated gesture. "Pooh! Nothing, nothing could happen to the brig," he cried, as if the flame of his heart could light up the dark nights of uncharted seas, and the image of Freya served for an unerring beacon amongst hidden shoals. As if the winds had to wait on his future, the stars fight for it in their courses. As if the magic of his passion had the power to float a ship on a drop of dew, or sail her through the eye of a needle simply because it was her magnificent lot to be the servant of a love so full of grace as to make all the ways of the earth safe, resplendent, and easy. "I suppose," I said, after he had finished laughing at my innocent enough remark, "I suppose you will be off today." That was what he meant to do. He had not gone at daylight, only because he expected me to come in. "And only fancy what has happened yesterday," he went on. "Why, mate left me suddenly. Had to. And as there's nobody to be found at a short notice, I am going to take Schultz with me. The notorious Schultz. Why don't you jump out of your skin? I tell you, I went and unearthed Schultz late last evening, after no end of trouble. I am your man, Captain," apostrophe he says, in that wonderful voice of his, "but I am sorry to confess I have practically no clothes to my back. I have had to sell all my wardrobe to get a little food from day to day." Apostrophe, apostrophe, what a voice that man has got. Talk about moving stones. But people seem to get used to it. I had never seen him before, and, upon my word, I felt suddenly tears rising to my eyes. Luckily it was dusk. He was sitting very quiet under a tree in a native compound as thin as a lath, and when I peered down at him, all he had on was an old cotton singlet and a pair of ragged pajamas. I bought him 6 white suits and 2 pairs of canvas shoes. Can't clear the ship without a mate. Must have somebody. I am going on shore presently to sign him on, and I shall take him with me as I go back on board to get underway. Now, I am a lunatic, am I not? Mad, of course. Come on. Lay it on thick. Let yourself go. I like to see you get excited. He so evidently expected me to scold that I took especial pleasure in exaggerating the calmness of my attitude. "The worst that can be brought up against Schultz," I began, folding my arms and speaking dispassionately, "is an awkward habit of stealing the stores of every ship he has ever been in. He will do it. That's really all that's wrong. I don't credit absolutely that story Captain Robinson tells of Schultz conspiring in Shantobin with some ruffians in a Chinese junk to steal the anchor off the starboard bow of the Bohemian Girl schooner. Robinson's story is too ingenious altogether. That other tale of the engineers of the Nanshan finding Schultz at midnight in the engine room busy hammering at the brass bearings to carry them off for sale on shore seems to me more authentic. Apart from this little weakness, let me tell you that Schultz is a smarter sailor than many who never took a drop of drink in their lives, and perhaps no worse morally than some men you and I know who have never stolen the value of a penny. He may not be a desirable person to have on board one's ship, but since you have no choice he may be made to do, I believe. The important thing is to understand his psychology. Don't give him any money till you have done with him. Not a cent, if he begs ever so. For as sure as fate, the moment you give him any money he will begin to steal. Just remember that." I enjoyed Jasper's incredulous surprise. "The devil he will," he cried. "Had on earth for? Aren't you trying to pull my leg, old boy?" "No, I'm not. You must understand Schultz's psychology. He's neither a loafer nor a cadger. He's not likely to wander about looking for somebody to stand him drinks. But suppose he goes on shore with $5, or 50 for that matter, in his pocket. After the third or fourth glass he becomes fuddled and charitable. He either drops his money all over the place, or else distributes the lot around, gives it to anyone who will take it. Then it occurs to him that the knight is young yet, and that he may require a good many more drinks for himself and his friends before morning. So he starts off cheerfully for his ship. His legs never get affected nor his head either in the usual way. He gets aboard and simply grabs the first thing that seems to him suitable, the cabin lamp, a coil of rope, a bag of biscuits, a drum of oil, and converts it into money without thinking twice about it. This is the process and no other. You have only to look out that he doesn't get a start. That's all. Confound his psychology, muttered Jasper. But a man with a voice like his is fit to talk to the angels. Is he incurable, do you think? I said that I thought so. Nobody had prosecuted him yet, but no one would employ him any longer. His end would be, I feared, to starve in some hole or other. Ah, well, reflected Jasper. He Benito isn't trading to any ports of civilization. That'll make it easier for him to keep straight. That was true. The brig's business was on uncivilized coasts, with obscure rajas dwelling in nearly unknown bays, with native settlements up mysterious rivers opening their somber, forest-lined estuaries among a welter of pale green reefs and dazzling sandbanks, in lonely straits of calm blue water all aglitter with sunshine. Alone, far from the beaten tracks, she glided, all white, round dark, frowning headlands, stole out, silent like a ghost, from behind points of land stretching out all black in the moonlight, or lay hove to, like a sleeping seabird, under the shadow of some nameless mountain waiting for a signal. She would be glimpsed suddenly on misty squally days dashing disdainfully aside the short aggressive waves of the Java Sea, or be seen far, far away, a tiny dazzling white speck flying across the brooding purple masses of thunderclouds piled upon the horizon. Sometimes, on the rare mail tracks, where civilization brushes against wild mystery, when the naive passengers crowding along the rail exclaimed, pointing at her with interest, H, here's a yacht, the Dutch captain, with a hostile glance, would grunt contemptuously. Act. No. That's only English, Jasper. A peddler, a good seaman, you say, ejaculated Jasper, still in the matter of the hopeless Schultz with the wonderfully touching voice. First rate. Ask anyone. Quite worth having, only impossible, I declared. He shall have his chance to reform in the brig, said Jasper, with a laugh. Here will be no temptations either to drink or steal where I am going to this time. I didn't press him for anything more definite on that point. In fact, intimate as we were, I had a pretty clear notion of the general run of his business. But as we are going ashore in his gig, he asked suddenly, "By the way, do you know where Heemskerk is?" I eyed him covertly, and was reassured. He had asked the question, not as a lover, but as a traitor. I told him that I had heard in Palembang that the Neptune was on duty down about Flores and Sumbawa, quite out of his way. He expressed his satisfaction. You know, he went on, that fellow, when he gets on the Borneo coast, amuses himself by knocking down my beacons. I have had to put up a few to help me in and out of the rivers. Early this year a celib trader becalmed in a prau was watching him at it. He steamed the gunboat full tilt at two of them, one after another, smashing them to pieces, and then lowered a boat on purpose, to pull out a third, which I had a lot of trouble 6 months ago to stick up in the middle of a mudflat for a tide mark. Did you ever hear of anything more provoking, eh? I wouldn't quarrel with the beggar, I observed casually, yet disliking that piece of news strongly. He isn't worthwhile. I quarrel? Cried Jasper. Don't want to quarrel. I don't want to hurt a single hair of his ugly head. My dear fellow, when I think of Freya's 21st birthday, all the world's my friend, Heemskerk included. It's a nasty, spiteful amusement, all the same. We parted rather hurriedly on the quay, each of us having his own pressing business to attend to. I would have been very much cut up had I known that this hurried grasp of the hand with, oh long, old boy, good luck to you, was the last of our partings. On his return to the Straits I was away, and he was gone again, before I got back. He was trying to achieve 3 trips before Freya's 21st birthday. At Nelson's Cove I missed him again by only a couple of days. Freya and I talked of that lunatic and perfect idiot with great delight and infinite appreciation. She was very radiant, with a more pronounced gaiety, notwithstanding that as he had just parted from Jasper. But this was to be their last separation. Do get aboard, as soon as you can, Miss Freya, I entreated. She looked me straight in the face, her color a little heightened, and with a sort of solemn ardor, if there was a little catch in her voice. The very next day. Ah, yes. The very next day after her 21st birthday. I was pleased at this hint of deep feeling. It was as if as he had grown impatient at last of the self-imposed delay. I supposed that Jasper's recent visit had told heavily. That's right, I said approvingly. She'll be much easier in my mind when I know you have taken charge of that lunatic. Don't you lose a minute. He, of course, will be on time unless heavens fall. Yes. Unless, she repeated in a thoughtful whisper, raising her eyes to the evening sky without a speck of cloud anywhere. Silent for a time, we let our eyes wander over the waters below, looking mysteriously still in the twilight, as if trustfully composed for a long, long dream in the warm tropical night. And the peace all around us seemed without limits and without end. And then we began again, to talk Jasper over in our usual strain. We agreed that he was too reckless in many ways. Luckily, the brig was equal to the situation. Nothing apparently was too much for her. A perfect darling of a ship, said Miss Freya. She and her father had spent an afternoon on board. Jasper had given them some tea. Papa was grumpy. I had a vision of old Nelson under the brick snowy awnings, nursing his unassuming vexation, and fanning himself with his hat. A comedy father. As a new instance of Jasper's lunacy, I was told that he was distressed at his inability to have solid silver handles fitted to all the cabin doors. As if I would have let him, commented Miss Freya, with amused indignation. Incidentally, I learned also that Schultz, the nautical kleptomaniac with the pathetic voice, was still hanging on to his job, with Miss Freya's approval. Jasper had confided to the lady of his heart his purpose of straightening out the fellow's psychology. Yes, indeed. All the world was his friend, because it breathed the same air with Freya. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.